We like to look at things, you know. We like to look at things that seem like they're pretty ordinary and everybody has answers for. One of the wonderful things about being a teenager is how you can have so many answers for life. All you got to do is, you know, and if you talk to a teenager and they have many, many answers that they've learned because they've heard, they've been told by their parents, all you have to do is study and you'll get ahead. All you have to do is dedicate. All you have to do is not care so much. All you have to do. Answers are really wonderful to have. And then you find out later in life, those answers didn't really save you because they didn't save you. But what about when you need help? What about that? How about your answers when it comes to that? And everyone hates asking for help. I believe almost everyone does. We're afraid of seeming weak. We think it's an admission of failure. We simply don't know how. So instead, we continue to struggle alone with both day-to-day burdens, you know, and crisis, sometimes serious crisis. Why? Why do we make things much harder on ourselves by not reaching out? This is what I want to look at today. I want to look at what stops people. What is the thing that happens that stops people from reaching out for help? And I'm not saying that you should. Maybe you're better off not asking for help, you know? Maybe. So let's look at it from every aspect. Carl Gustav Jung was a famous psychologist, Jung, J-U-N-G. He was a Jung man. Jung was, he talked about archetypes, and archetype to him was something that personifies a way of being. One archetype he talked about was called the beggar. And he said there is nothing that people hate most than being seen as the beggar. Now, of course, how could we say that when we see so many people who seem comfortable being the beggar, you know, on the streets and things like that, when they put out their hand, can I have a dollar for a cup of coffee, or can I, you know. It seems that most of those beggars don't feel like beggars. They feel like aggressively they're in command. They're demanding something of you. You know, they don't feel really powerless and helpless. It's not real begging. We've seen real begging, of course, in different places. But begging is something we don't want to be at. Usually it's a place where we're not going to survive very long when you're at the begging point. So Jung saw this as one of the things that people mostly avoid. I think it goes much deeper and much bigger than that. Here's some of the issues that I think. One is, I think we love our independence. We have a fear of dependency. I think one of the things that stop us from asking for help is thinking that we might become dependent on another person. Just think about your parents. How many times as a kid you needed help, you know, as a teenager, as growing up, you know, early 20s, and you couldn't make ends meet, and you wanted to call your parents and say, I need your help, and just so they would send you a few dollars to help you through, but you didn't want to do it because you didn't want to feel like you didn't make it. You had pride, and you didn't want to feel dependent, and you didn't want them to stand over you and say, see, you can't make it on your own. In fact, one of the reasons that people don't want to ask for help is because they feel by asking for help, it puts them in a childlike position with the person they're asking for help becomes the adult, the grown-up, the parent. Let me repeat that to you. One of the reasons men don't ask for directions, right, when they're out there lost on the road, is they don't like the childlike position it puts them in when they say, which way to 42nd Street? Because it puts the other person in a position of power, almost like they are the parent and you are the child. Men asking for help. That's a silly thing. Of course you ask for help. But no, most men feel that they shouldn't ask for directions. They should figure it out themselves. And I think that's partially because when a man's behind the wheel of a car, he feels like a real man, you know, and he's supposed to be the man. Lucky women. So part of what it is this feeling of succumbing to this kind of littleness, powerlessness we feel when we are that way, but it's much bigger than this too. I mean, it would be nice if you could ask for help, but can you take no for an answer? Can you? Can you ask somebody, would you please help me? And if they say no, do they have a choice? I asked a woman here if she, who works with me, can you ask your children for help? And she said, sure, I'll ask my children for help. I said, is it asking for help or is it telling them to help you? It's telling them to help me. You know, help me do the dishes. I mean, it's not, can you help me do the dishes? Well, if the child said, mommy, I feel sick and I want to go, you know, my stomach, I feel like, of course, mommy might say no. It's okay. It's excusable. But mostly, asking somebody to help you is kind of demanding, mostly. So people kind of demand with families, they demand, you know, when a child, a parents with their children do not ask for help, they demand help. So the question becomes, what is it? What is it that stops us? What's the big deal? You need help, right? I look at people, people medically sick. I see people bleeding who won't ask a doctor for help. They won't ask for a Band-Aid. People with headaches, they won't ask for an aspirin if they need it. I see it so often. Why won't people go to a doctor, a physician, a healer, Majid Ali, I don't care who, if you need help? If you're miserable, why? Well, there's an answer to that. I'm going to get to that with you today. It's really amazing. It goes deep in the psyche. There's a few things I want to talk about. One is, I want to talk about three fears. One fear, the fear of surrender. The second fear, the fear of shame. The third fear is the fear of separation. And how this impacts on your inability, or someone else's who you might know, inability to ask for help. So here we go again, fear of surrender, which includes that fear of dependency. You know what I mean? Fear of surrender, it's like, I give up control. I need help. I'm not in control. And it's like, in order to admit that to yourself, you got to let it go. You got to kind of fall backwards. Did you ever, I mean, think about it right now. Think about what you could really use help with. And who do you ask? Do you ask for help? You know, and nowadays, I liked it. The other day, I was had, I've been having some issues with Yahoo, you know, the web browser server Yahoo, because they've been doing some things with mail. So I went to call them up, and I spoke to a few high-level execs who eventually got to the point where they said, there is no way to call Yahoo. I finally got an inside number for people who pay thousands of dollars as businessmen to use Yahoo, and I got through that way. But it's interesting that Yahoo Help does not offer help, because the only help they offer is online help, you see, and you can't get live help. No more asking people for help. Call a hospital, try to get some help. You know, nowadays they still got some humans answering the phone. Call my office. We will answer the phone because we know it's important. Fear of surrender. Fear of surrender, letting yourself acknowledge the fact that you can't make it on your own at this moment. You need help. Letting yourself see that. Okay, one. Fear of shame. This fear is especially true among perfectionists. The fear of being seen as flawed. You know, you ask a friend of yours, I really need $20. Can I borrow $20? Please lend it to me, $20. It's like, what's the matter with you? You don't have $20. What's the matter? You need this money. What is? There's a fear of being judged in some way. And properly so, because you are judged. When somebody looks at you and you say, I need, would you please help me? They look at you as if, well, you know, some part of you didn't work because you really shouldn't be needing help. But if you are needing help, okay, let's see what we can do for you. Third, so the fear of shame is about being seen as less than perfect and being flawed in some way. And the third is a fear of separation. Now, this is a very important thing, the fear of separation. The fear of separation as it relates to the inability to ask for help. You see, somewhere inside all of us, we believe we're alone. Somewhere inside all of us, we feel like, you know, we really can't depend on anybody. That's somewhere inside you, vaguely. And if this is true, somewhere inside you, you believe you can't depend on anybody else. If you ask for help, two things can happen. One is you might get the help. Well, what would be wrong with that? Well, if that's true, and here we go to a few layers of psychology, if it's true that somebody will give you help when you need it, then why haven't you asked for it before? It shatters your entire belief on which you built your personality, that nobody's there for you. Then you wonder, why wasn't anybody there for me before? And sometimes, just by asking somebody for help who gives it to you graciously, you wind up getting angry at your parents who never gave you the help you needed. You say to yourself, look how easy it is to get loved. I didn't know it was this easy to get loved. Why wasn't I loved back then? So one of the dangers of asking for help is getting it. That's a trouble, because it could shake your very belief in yourself. And how that relates to separation is, you believe you are truly separated. When you ask for help and you get it, you realize you're not and you never were, and your whole belief in your separated self, this independent self, shatters. Maybe too complex a thought at the moment. We're going to get back to it. The other thing that could happen when you ask for help is you may not get it. Now, this really does, it digs in deeper that you're alone. Think about this, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking about being, asking for help. Okay? When in your life can you remember as a child saying to yourself, it's only me. It's up to me. There's nobody I could truly depend on. It's up to me. I'm the only one who could do it. I'm the only one who could do it right. Think back. Think back of when you gave up asking people for help. For many of you, it was in childhood, early childhood. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's A Positive Mind. Now, sometimes when you ask for help, you're not really asking, you know, I mean, let's think about it. Let's say you have I have a friend, and my friend has a house, and his house, he lives there, and he has trouble kind of keeping it in order, right? He's a messy guy. So he has trouble keeping it in order, and he asks his friend who comes over to visit him, he says, please help me keep this place in order. And it's not so much that his friend doesn't clean up. She doesn't clean up necessarily to help him keep the house in order. But what happens to him is it breaks his heart every time she messes up a little bit. Every time she puts one cup down and leaves it out of order, he goes, oh, no, inside, because he's just screaming because he can't help himself. When you feel like you can't help yourself around an issue, it leaves such a door open for you to get angry at people. Ask for help specifically. Will you please help me clean this place? Will you please help me by not adding anything to this house to make it dirtier than it is? Would you please, I ask you. But to ask that feels so ungracious. You know, you want to be, oh, no, I don't want to ask them of that. I want them to know in advance what I need. Did you ever feel that way about asking for help? I want them to know what I need. I don't want to have to ask for it. Oh, my gosh, almighty, having people to read your mind in order for you, rather than spare you, or rather than make you ask for help, you'd rather that they had to read your mind and know you need help and therefore come over to help you. Well, nice magic trick. This way you're not going to get asked. This way you're not going to receive what you need. Ask most people why they don't ask for help, and the majority will say, what if the person says no? Well, is it an option? If you ask for help, is it a choice? I know a person who borrows money, and I know he is always in debt. Always, always, always in debt. Credit card debt up the... what? Wazoo. George Colin Wirian, when we need you. Up the budget, right? Credit card debt, right? $17, 17%, 20% debt, needs money. Goes to his friend and says, I want to borrow money. The friend says, no. I will not lend you money. Because to lend you money is two things are going to happen. I'm going to make you sicker, and I'm going to be one of those people that you're going to feel that you owe money to. And I don't want to lose this friendship. And he said, but I need this money desperately. They're coming after me. They're going to take my house. No. I am going to stay your friend. I see what you do with money. I'm not going to do it with you. He later discovered that his friend stole money from him. Because some people feel that if they ask for help, like if you have money, don't have money, and you ask somebody who does have money for help, and they don't give it to you, you feel justified in stealing it. You feel justified. I've had that a couple of times with people. You know where I've seen them steal? Because they feel that just because they asked for something and it was denied them, they would take something. Didn't you ever feel that when you go into a store and you want something or you want a special provision, you know, and if you could get something for free, you certainly take it for free? Well, some people do. Now, another reason that people don't ask for help is because it goes back to the guy who's not asking about driving instructions. Because you don't want to be, you want to be strong. You know, you want to be strong. And what happens when you ask for help is you become weaker, small. That, in your mind, is the way that, not in many of you who can't ask for help, that's the way you feel. I have no trouble asking for help. I have no trouble. I mean, if I need help, I'll just simply say, would you please help me with this if you can? And if the person says no, I'll say, fine. That's fine by me. I know if you don't. But if the person did help, it would be fine too. I wouldn't feel like anything's happened to me. I haven't changed. I haven't become a child. But most people don't ask for help because asking for help is a childlike position. Now, which is why, which brings us to romance and love and this whole idea of loving and needing each other and helping each other. If somebody needs you, isn't that a wonderful thing? As long as I need, you know, you, as long, if somebody, if a man, a woman says, I don't like him, or I don't want to go out with him because he doesn't need me. I'm expendable, so I'm going to stop seeing him. I want my man to need me, okay? So that's good, and then the man finally turns around, and in love he turns to you and says, I need you. And that feels wonderful and gushy and romantic, and it feels strong and powerful and meaningful, and you feel like it's a wonderful connection. And then he says, and I need you again. And he says it to you again. You say, oh, that's really nice. Thank you very much. And he says, you know, he calls you in the middle of the night. I was just thinking about you. You know, I really realize how much I need you. And then they keep going with the need you, and need you becomes a trap. Need you becomes a kind of trap that your mother would use on you when she misses you and wants you to come around. I need you to help me. I need you. Need you becomes a trap. You are needed now becomes the thing, the cage that you're living in, and you resent it because you're needed. And a relationship that started off as a nice romantic relationship turns into this horrible thing of you feeling guilty because the other person needs you so much. So you're afraid to, you know, go out and be on your own. You're afraid to say no to them. They need you. Needing somebody is a passive-aggressive way, or telling somebody you need them is a way of trapping somebody. It's not necessarily, oh, it's almost never the truth when it's at that level. Okay, so let's talk about helplessness and people who are helpless. There are people who just don't get it in life. They can't pull their life together. They're mostly people who are disorganized. And disorganized people tend to be at loose ends. And if they're at loose ends, they feel helpless. And if they feel helpless, they feel powerless. And they feel frantic at times. And the very thing that makes a person frantic makes them feel like they need help and they feel helpless. This energy, this kind of all over the place scattered energy. You know anybody like that? Do you know anybody? Can you think of a particular, think of one person you know who's like a lost child, like a damaged somebody, who's like just like, oh, my God, they need so much help. They need it, they need it, they need it, just helplessness. You see that in a person, and sometimes at the beginning, it's very nice to see somebody needy. I knew a man who used to go out with women, and I would say to him when he dated somebody, I would say, how did that date go? And he said, oh, I didn't like her. And I said, why? He said, because she didn't need me, because she was successful all on her own. And he had money. This guy was a fairly wealthy guy. He was a client of mine. And he said, in order for me to have a relationship with somebody, I have to have more money than them, because I know I'm going to start giving them a little money at a time, and they're going to need me, and that'll be my attachment. So that's the way he would do it. So neediness is a very attractive thing. Needy young women, you know, are like helpless little chickens in the world. When they go through the world, for men, especially horny men, that is the perfect kind of target. Oh, you're needy? Let me take you in. Let me take care of you. Let me take you to bed. Let me tell you how I'm going to save your life until I'm done with you, and then let me put you back out where I found you. So needy people are very, very attractive to a woman who's had men leave her. A needy man is a wonderful thing. They'll find a guy who looks powerless and helpless, and he's sitting on a park bench, and he's an artist. And they take him in, and they take him to bed because he needs them. And he says, oh, you're making my life so much better. You see, and the woman feels great because she's got this guy who needs her. But she also gets the benefits of his need. By his needing her, she can use him for her own reasons, and so can the man use his mate for his own reasons. So neediness is great, but now here's what happens. Imagine somebody you love needs you, and they need something from you, and then they say, I need your help, and you give them help. They need $1,000, and you go borrow it, you find it, you do whatever you can, you give them $1,000, and a week later they're in the same spot. And you feel, I thought this $1,000 was going to save you. I thought this $1,000 was going to be the answer. Oh, no, it's not the answer, because now I need more money, or now I need something else, or now I need a different home, or now I need... And so you try to provide that need a second time, and then you notice that that which you thought would be the end of the need is not the end of the needs, and the needs get even greater, and you say to yourself, oh, no, what have I done? Now what happens? When there's a needy person and there's a provider, there's an angry person, the provider. He gets angry, and he starts telling the person how to live their lives. So there you are, a needy, helpless, hysterical, loose ends, truly, person who suffers in life. You ask for help, the person gives you help, you take it, of course, because you're helpless, you need help. And then you ask for help again, and they give you the help again, and then you take it. Because they give it to you. But then you go back a third time, and all of a sudden they're telling you how to live your life. You should go to school, and you should clean up your room, and you should line up your ducks, and if you do this, and then you do that, and they suddenly have the right to command you. What it really is they don't have the right to command you, they're just angry at you. And they're angry because they feel powerless behind your neediness. Happens in a lot of relationships. Happens a lot with illness, you know. When somebody you love is ill and they need you, and they try, and you try, and you try, and you try, when you get to the point where you realize you can't help them, you get angry. And you start telling them what they have to do. You can't do this anymore. You shouldn't eat this. You should try this. You should go soak your feet in peroxide. You know, you should do any number of things. You tell them things to do because you're powerless. But what your instructions are is they're not out of love. They're not out of a desire to help. They're out of anger. You're angry at them. So you start commanding them and telling them what to do. You chastise them like they're a child. This is Armand DeMille Positive Mind. You know, lastly, we're going to take your calls, too, about asking for help. I have a lot more to tell you about it, but it's important to consider. We're going to talk about guardian angel syndrome, or GAS. Guardian angel syndrome, or GAS. Some people believe they have guardian angels. Now, this is very true of attractive people. Attractive men and attractive women seem to get taken care of a little more than the not-so-attractive people, right? So attractive people, attractive powerless people, they can go through life and they will get help. I'll tell you a story I know about a man who was related to a woman. It was a new girlfriend and she was living with him. And it came tax time and she would come by and she would bring him a shopping bag full of receipts. And he said, well, we have to do our taxes. And she had this shopping bag full of receipts. And he said, what are you giving me a shopping bag full of receipts for? He said, you have to organize them and put them in order, and we have to put them in categories, and then we could do the taxes. And she said, oh, no. He said, but how could you just do it this way? She said, the Lord always provides. And he said, okay. And he helped her out, and they put the taxes. Next year, she comes by, it's tax time, shopping bag full of receipts. He said, didn't you learn anything? You're supposed to organize them, put them in order, and get them in categories, and we got to have houses and, you know, transportation, so on and so forth. And she said, look, don't get so upset. The Lord always provides. You get more upset about this stuff than you should, she said to him. And then the third time she shows up with the shopping bag, he realized something. She was right. The Lord always provided, and he was the Lord. And that's it. See, so some people can easily get by in life having this gas, the guardian angel syndrome. They have people taking care of them over and over again. Finally, let me bring it to the person who lays around their house sick. There are some people who lay around their house and they have an impairment. It could be anything from breathing difficulties, overweight, things that are really stopping them. You're laying around the house, and when you lay around the house, you get a little lazy after a while. And when you get this kind of lack of motion and lack of mobility, you think about energy expenditure, and you think, can I get up and go across the room and get that glass of water, or shall I ask Sadie, my roommate, to get it for me? Hey, Sadie, would you get me a glass of water? Sadie says, sure, here's, I'll get you a glass of water. You get used to that, you see. Hey, Sadie, would you mind picking up those things and bringing them over? Sure, I'll pick them up and bring them to you. And little by little, you begin asking for thing after thing after thing. Now, the trouble with this is you're killing yourself because your body is no longer moving. Getting up to get your own things and not asking people to fetch for you is a very important way of staying alive. There is so much energy that takes place. It's a way of doing exercise. If you're really sick, try to do as much for yourself as possible. Ask for help when you need it, but don't ask for help and let yourself get sicker, because what happens if the person on the other side recognizes that you're getting worse by not getting up? What's the act of love? The act of love is to say to you, get it yourself. No, darling, I love you, but I can't see you sitting there that way. You must take care of yourself a little better, and I ask you to at least get up. Look, we'll take a walk. We'll go out in the hallway. You know, let's do something. You must help yourself in some way. So, more to it, of course. We're going to take a short break. When we get back from our break, we're going to play you a little music that you're going to find familiar, very briefly. And then after that, we're going to continue with our conversation and take your phone calls about asking for help at 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900 will be the number when we get back from our break. And we're going to take a short break and come right back. certainly recognizable, isn't it? Want to hear it a different way? Listen to this Peter Sellers version. Just a minute of it.
Help, I need somebody, help. Not just anybody, help. You know I need someone, help.
When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, I am not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind. I've opened up the door.
You can find that. Look for Peter Sellers with Help. It's in a celebration of Peter Sellers. It was kind of an interesting thing he did. I think he took his little foray into being a Shakespearean actor. So, you know, asking for help is a story we're talking about today, and we're talking about needing people and needing each other, and we do. You know, it's an interdependent society. This is not a world where, I always think July 4th should be called Interdependence Day, not Independence Day. Enough of this independence. You know, democracy has made people crazy by teaching them that they're so separate and they have to compete with each other in order to get ahead, and that you can't depend on anybody and don't ask for help and be strong all by yourself. That's the democratic way. It's crazy. It's a crazy way. Yeah, democracy is a decent thing, but we're all in it together, my friends. We're all in it. I mean, you know, yes, I get thousands of calls for help, of course, because I offer help. Some of them I could help, some I can't help, most I do. But I get lots of calls for it because that's what I do. I'm in what's called the helping profession, right? Psychotherapy, helping profession. That's what we do. You don't call me, you know, and I don't get mad at you if you ask me for help. I may not be able to help you, but if you ask me for help, I'm not going to get mad at you for asking because that's what I do. I'm in the helping profession. So is a physician. In the helping profession. Now, you call your physician and you ask for help, and it's another issue. You know, you get help. You may have to wait online. You may have to stay there a little longer. Hopefully, you do get the help that you ask for. But then comes this issue about asking for help and not knowing who to trust. Who do you trust when you ask for help? If you ask a friend for help, can you trust that they're not going to tell somebody else stories about you? Can you ask your family for help and be sure that they're not going to think of you a certain way? Can you ask your children for help and not feel like you're imposing on them? Do you ask your friends, but you're afraid it's going to turn into gossip? When is there help? You know, one of the worst things that happen when you have a relationship with somebody, and then that somebody turns out to need you, just because something is wrong, like they lose their job or something, and they need you, and they ask you for help, and you help them. And then they ask you for more help, and you help them out. And then you ask, and then this relationship sets up. If you're in a relationship with somebody where they're always asking you for help, and you're always providing help, it is no longer an adult-adult relationship. It is a parent-child relationship. And that person becomes your child. Now, what's so bad about that? Two things. Number one is, you wanted a partner. You didn't want a baby. You wanted a baby, you would have had sex or go adopted one. You wanted a partner. You didn't want a baby. You didn't want a child. But now this person has turned into your child. And you've kind of allowed it because, you know, you were feeding it the whole way. And maybe it's true. Maybe they're sick. Maybe there is no choice. Maybe they have a disorder, an ailment, and they need your help. Now they are your child. Okay. Your anger, though, that comes out of you when you start advising them on what they have to do, once again goes to this issue of your loss. I lost my partner. I now have a child. How many of you have children as partners? What about your parents? Your parents used to help you all the time, right? Now your parents come to you for help. And now your parent becomes your child. Well, there's a second part to it, because you know what's wrong with that? We all hope eventually that we will be taken care of as well. And now, when you find out that the people who are supposed to take care of you, you're taking care of, you lose all hopes of finding some kind of benign parent yourself. Well, friends, you know, as we know, there's a lot more that we could do around this. One of the nice things about aging and getting old and getting sick and getting helpless is usually your consciousness becomes so little that you don't even know that you're asking for help anymore and people are helping you out. And that becomes the condition, you know, and that's why I think part of the reason they wipe out the brains and they make the brains not work so well. So that if you're going to be that helpless, you know, you can't perceive yourself as that helpless. Because many people, if they ever saw themselves as needy as they really are when they're sick, they would end it right there. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take some telephone calls. 212-209-2900 is our number here. If you've been standing by waiting while I tell you all this stuff, I apologize. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, could you talk a little louder?
Oh, yeah, hi.
Hi there.
Good connection?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Bob. I'm calling from Long Island. It seems like the longest island of them all.
Yeah, but Bob, I know your voice. You've
I know yours too, Armand.
You've turned down the radio, would you?
It's down.
You have to turn it off.
Oh, okay. Better?
Much better.
Oh, really? I didn't know it could feed back even when it was at zero.
Yeah.
So great. Great show, Armand. It's kind of my middle name is Help.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember what you said when I first tuned in. It was something about finding that special someone who meets your needs, and then you find that special place inside of yourself where you realize you never really needed the help to begin with, and that the answer was inside of you all the whole time, but the other person was just being a conduit for it. Was that what you were referring to?
I guess so, sure. Is that what you've seen in yourself?
What I've experienced is I have experienced that, but that was taken away from me. So in other words, I had some very close friendships in recovery, and I was able to kind of bond and grow with these people and share our common problems and be non-judgmental. And I found that a lot of these people kind of went their own way, and I feel really abandoned by them. And I don't know. It seems like I feel cheated that I sort of discovered the secret, so to speak, which is that all we really need is someone to be empathic and to identify with us, and then everything seems to automatically clarify itself and work itself out once the stress of needing the help is gone. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do, and I understand. I think you've learned quite a bit about yourself because you're one of the most introspective people, I know of. It's good that you're able to look and learn.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I have a medical problem.
I know.
And what comes to mind when I think of help is what happens when help is not helpful? And when help thinks it's being helpful and then help gets irritated at the person who's asking for help, because the person who thinks he's helping is addressing it only in the limited way he knows how. So he gets kind of pissed off that the other person, the person who's asking for help, in this case me, still seems ungrateful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. And I think one of the things... Oh, there it goes. It's all cleared up. Thank you. I think one of the things that happened, Bob, is if somebody with the skills that you have should be able to communicate to somebody else exactly what you're saying. You could say that to somebody who you love or who cares about you. Let me ask you something. How did this take place? You know, how did it happen that you were taking care of me willfully and, you know, willingly? And you know, how did this all happen that suddenly you seemed to resent me? How did it happen? What did I do that got us to that point?
Oh.
Now, that's the hero's question.
I usually get the villain's answer,
which is
like usually blaming me for not being cooperative.
Well, good. I mean, Ted, tell me. I see now the blaming you for not being cooperative is going to be what they see. So I want to know more about that. Well, tell me, how am I not cooperative? Go ahead, play the role with me. Imagine you were scolding me. Well, what do you mean? Because I didn't take the noni juice you wanted me to drink? Is that it?
Well, Mr. DeMille, it's obvious that you come to me for help. I'm giving you help. But then you keep asking me for help. I've told you my suggestions, and you refuse to take them over and over and over again.
These suggestions don't feel like they're the right suggestions. I'm sorry. I know you're in your best heart. But they don't feel like the suggestions that match my need.
Then it's obvious that we can't work together, and you have to seek help elsewhere.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to push me away?
I'm afraid you've given me another option. I mean, you're pushing yourself away, my friend. I mean, you're your own worst enemy.
Hold on a second, Mr. Bob. Let me think about that. Dr. Bob. Okay, right. Dr. Bob, let me think about what you're saying. Maybe what you're saying is true. I'm going to think about that, and I'm going to consider that, and then I'm going to get back to you and tell you what I feel about it, okay? But I really appreciate your feedback.
Okay, now you can pay on your way out.
Thank you very
much. No, I'm serious. I'm not being facetious.
No, you know, I'll tell you something, though, Bob. What you're saying is something that takes place between providers, medical providers, psychological providers. That's one thing. But what I was talking about is what happens between friends, and the very same thing happens between friends, you know, where they do the same thing. Friends have the same thing happen where they get angry at you because you're not taking their advice. So I appreciate it. I appreciate everything you're bringing up, and thank you.
Well,
thanks for the role play.
Can I say one more thing?
I want to get another call in here, and we've been on.
You might appreciate it though.
Okay, go ahead.
Part of the reason I call is basically my way of asking for help. You know, it's reaching out to you. You know, and to that's why I call, because I feel like I have nowhere else to go.
I understand that.
Anyway, I'll speak to you soon. I'll probably pop you an email.
Thank you. That's always good. Thank you very much. And part of what happens is when you use and you try to use the vehicle of this call to try to get the help that you need, you know, for on a much bigger level, it's very difficult. I can't help you with what your needs are, which are such enormous needs here on the phone. And I know we've probably had exchanges in the past where I've tried to help you, you know, or done that. But as you said, shoot me an email. I try my best to respond. 212-209-2900. Yes, it is very difficult. You know what I never understand? How therapists go away on vacation at Christmas time. They go away on vacation at Christmas time. They can't be heard for a month or for 2 weeks. How do they do such a thing? It's the highest rate of suicide, the time when people kill themselves the most and the most depression. And then they say, okay, I help you for a living and I give you money and here it is, you know. But now I'm going on vacation and if you have any troubles, go to the hospital. Right? I mean, if you're in the helping profession, you know, isn't it supposed to be your life? If you're a medical doctor and you're treating somebody, aren't you responsible in some way to help that person the best you can? 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, it is. I can't believe I got on the air.
This is it.
Yeah. Well, it's great speaking to you, but after you spoke with that last gentleman, probably you won't be able to help me. What I'm looking for is recognition with having a family issue. I have a brother who did something wrong to my husband, and all I wanted was an apology, and 8 years have gone by and it hasn't come. And family situations has occurred, and weddings and stuff, and instead of fixing the problem, they just didn't invite. And I my pain is not for me, because I'm 46 and I've lived with pain with them my whole life, and for me it was kind of like, oh, you know, a breath of fresh air. But I have two daughters who my older niece and nephew decided to stop seeing my daughters, which were young at the time. That's my hurt, and I need
help with
that.
All right, so let's start with that, you know, and maybe I can help you. What's your name?
Janine.
Janine, I'll only have a couple of minutes to do this with you, but I'm going to say something to you.
Okay.
that this is a great opportunity, mm-hmm. because here is a chance to break this very dysfunctional family system, which has been dysfunctional for many years,
even before you, generations before you.
Yes. You've got this kind of
toxicity. That's what I was trying to do.
Let me finish. Let me talk to you, okay? Mm-hmm. So you've got this kind of toxicity that's running through mm-hmm. the system, and mm-hmm. it appears... Every now and then it appears when something like this comes up, and how crazy everybody is mm-hmm. manifests in not, I'm not going to talk to you, I'm not going to talk to your children, I'm not going to do this. The struggle serves everybody. Mm-hmm. Yesterday I did a program about family systems theory. I think that was on Tuesday.
I listened to that, yeah.
On Tuesday. Everything in a system serves everybody in the family system. That your brother's behavior in some way serves your husband's well-being. His rejection of how he did this, this whole thing, everybody's involved. Everybody's a player. And Janine, you too get something out of it. You get something out of it by being the person in the middle who is going to negotiate this and explain everything and try to get it to work, and it makes it your dedication, and then you explain it to your children. You're in the middle of this.
Yeah.
See, there's a role that you're playing here of being needed at a level that you're probably not that needed.
No.
So I'm saying the following to you. I'm saying if you really want to look at it, then I say you take yourself to a therapist who understands systems and get them to look at this with you. You know, like we've got that person at my center here, Stephanie Dombra. She studies, she's a specialist in systems theories. She understands how the family systems work.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Italian destruct, you know, where the brother is the king. And but, like, it was an issue, and he got my mother involved. And,
sure.
And everybody, and my mother took his side. But
and
I
this
never
drama took place before.
Mother.
You know, 100 years ago, mm-hmm. the same drama took mm-hmm. place. Another issue. Something about who picked the mushrooms and
right.
ate them and,
yeah.
you know, yeah. and who threw them to what dog and who stole my toys. It's that way in families. But everybody's involved. It's a way that the family keeps from staying connected on a more gentle level. They stay connected on this aggressive level.
But we're not even connected. It's like,
yes,
you know,
you are.
It's been 8 years.
You're connected by hate.
I
That's
don't hate,
connection.
Though. I
okay.
just, you know, I just like
But it's
like
in
ways.
There. It's in the family.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, you know, what I'm going to say is give me a call. I could talk to you
I had made an appointment
it.
To see you Wednesday, believe it or not.
Believe it, this,
September
this,
12th, because I really want to speak with you. But I said in 45 minutes.
Now we've got this time, too. Is that part of the donation to WBAI?
So.
Good. Great. Okay. We look forward to seeing you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
It's an amazing thing. We had this fun drive where we offered these consultations with me through WBAI. And they're still happening. Amazing number of people. 212-209-2900 is our number here. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi. You're on the air.
212-209-2900. Hello.
Hello. Could you turn down your radio completely?
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I have a lot of trouble.
I can't hear you very well.
Yeah, I have a trouble with my daughter. My daughter got married, and she have a cell phone, and she don't give me her number, and I can't get in touch with her most of the time. The only thing I can get in touch with her is with her husband, but the cell phone and the husband, he never answer for me. So I can really get in touch with her.
So your children, your daughter,
yeah.
feels that she doesn't trust you on a telephone. She doesn't trust you that when you call her, she doesn't want to hear from you. She doesn't want you to invade her place. She doesn't want you to have her phone number. So why does she feel this way about you?
She said I was calling her too much.
All right. So what if you said... Okay, I won't call you too much. I will never use it unless it's an emergency, ever.
Right.
I promise. And if I break that promise, I will send you $100 and I'll never call you again.
Mm-hmm.
What if you said that to her? What if you said, honey, because why do you want her cell phone number, by the way? You know, she doesn't have emergencies. Why do you want it? You want to call her?
Because I like to, you know, to talk to her.
Yeah, and she doesn't want to be your friend. She wants to be your daughter. You see, that's the problem. I could sense it. She doesn't want, you know, when you call your daughter, in a way, you become a child to your daughter, and your daughter becomes a parent. Because you're talking to her about things, and she listens, and you're, oh, yeah, Mom, okay, sure. But she becomes a grown-up, and you become the child. And she's saying to you, no, Mom, please, don't call me up for help, because I want to be the child. I don't want to be the, I don't want to be your
because
parent.
Sometimes I think something, and I like to talk to her.
Yeah, I understand. Well, you got to change the deal with her. You're going to have to talk with her about it. And I could tell you something I recommend, and I've seen this often enough. It takes two people, one meeting with a good couples counselor to solve that problem, because you could just make a deal, and you make a deal with somebody there who can help you arrange it. So I recommend you go for help with it, because if not...
By myself or with her?
No, with her. With her. Ask her if she'll join you.
I did ask her, and she said, you're not my husband, why you gotta come? I got to come with you. She don't want to do it.
So there she is. There she's saying it. Then go yourself and let's find out what it is you do, because you're going to find out things about yourself that are going to help you get through life. You may even find about it in a group or something, you know, where you learn about yourself. So take the jump yourself. Go find out about yourself. And that's
now,
the thing.
Like, I don't even want her number. Really, at the end, I don't even want her number.
I know, we do get to that point. Rather than that, then go find out what it is about you that is making these demands.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do, I like to talk to her.
So I'm gonna have to be going, but I'm going to say to you, what's your name, by the way?
My name is Rose.
Rose, what I'm going to say to you is, if you want to get yourself straight, you could talk to her, you could write her a letter, always, of course. But if you want to get yourself straight, this is a case where you have to find out what it is about yourself that she finds so difficult to deal with. And it won't be what she tells you. You have to dig in. And I think one of the things, one of the ways you'd find this out is if you sought out a professional who could help you with that. You know, and there are a lot of counselors who can really help you with that.
To help me, right?
Yeah, to help you. To help you deal with your feelings and learn about yourself.
Like, I miss her and I want to see her.
All of that. All of that. Deal with
it. Hold on.
I've got to get going. Thank you for calling in, Rosa.
Thank you.
You know, lastly, I want to say one thing about compassion. Compassion is a very important element here. We ask for compassion from people when we ask for help. We ask them to be compassionate with our needs. I want to say one thing that is a critically important thing in being able to both get and give help. You must find compassion for yourself. Finding compassion for yourself and really not feeling sorry for yourself, but feeling compassionate about the child you that feels powerless at times is essential. You'd provide yourself with the compassion you need, and you'll find you're much less needy with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm going to take we'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. Tuesday at 1 p.m., you could go to thepositivemind.com is our web address. Thepositivemind.com and see what we have. That's email. Armand DeMille@thepositivemind.com will go to www.thepositivemind to see what we've got. Back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. Back to Bonnie Raitt for you, Michael.
You can tell me one thing, but I know it ain't true. You can tell me one thing. But you know what you're saying ain't true. But it's gonna get you, baby. revolution got a mind of its own.